Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Reports from the U.S.-Mexico border are splashed on the front pages of major newspapers. The stay-in-Mexico policy, overcrowded detention facilities, separated families, and children taking care of children in unsanitary conditions. The border has dominated headlines. The border isn't all about that, though. It's more complex and culturally rich. Two journalists who have covered the U.S.-Mexico border for years are Alfredo Corchado and Angela Cochurga. Corchado is Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News. He's covered the drug wars, cartels, police corruption, and has received death threats over his coverage. He calls the border his home. Angela Cochurga covers Mexico, southern New Mexico, and the southwest border for the Albuquerque Journal. Today on Fronteras, Corchado and Cochurga talk with our Marfa Public Radio colleague, Carlos Morales, about their careers covering the border.
Alfredo, Angela, thank you for talking with me
today.
Thank
you, Carlos.
Thank you, Carlos.
So both of your careers are so deeply connected to the borderlands. Alfredo, you spent much of your childhood in El Paso, and Angela, if I'm not mistaken, you were born in Mexico, moved to Brownsville, and now you live in El Paso. So you've both been covering the border for decades now. How do you find that the Frontera really, inspired you to do what you do now as reporters? And what is it about it that continues to kind of pull you in?
I think from the moment that I thought I wanted to be a foreign correspondent or be a journalist, I think back now and I think I would have never have done it had I not been raised on the border. Because the border was the perfect laboratory. When you're a young student and you're trying to, figure out what is foreign correspondent, how do you cover another country? I mean, imagine going to El Paso Community College or UTEP, and you're there in the daytime, and then you cross into Juarez, and it's two different worlds, and you're back and forth and back and forth. I think that's really what shaped me as a reporter, and it shaped me to see the world not just in black and white, but really understand the gray area. And I think living on the border, being raised on the border, gives you that.
And Angela, how did the border kind of influence your desire to become a reporter and continue to be so?
Right. Well, so my professional and personal life have always been spent crisscrossing the border. Right when I graduated from UT Austin, I rushed back down to the border to cover what I saw as such a critical region and a place that was home to me. I feel most at home there. I've been open to bureau in Mexico City. I've been based in Dallas. I've been all over, but the border always draws me back. It's this fascinating place, this blend of cultures and conflict, and like all borders, contraband. But the best part is, this isn't a place that I see as a lot of people go there thinking, oh, I'm going to build a career. It's a stepping stone, or, mm-hmm. This is a hardship assignment. I can't wait to get out. I'll make a name. But that's been my dream to be there, and I've always returned, and it's home. So I'm happy to be on the border.
The border and immigration has really come to the forefront of our kind of collective attention lately. And a large part of that is the Trump administration's focus on immigration policy. And I'm wondering, Angela, why has immigration become the center of the administration's focus? Does it just come down to that campaign promise to build a wall?
We keep hearing that, and different versions of it. And, people away from the border don't realize we already have a barrier in strategic places along the border. But, at rallies, that's the rallying cry, build the wall. And for people away from the border, they envision this wide-open no-man's land with hordes of criminals running across and are often very surprised to find out that's not the case. There is a lot of security right now, and there are vibrant communities there. These are places where people live. And maybe that's one of the benefits of all this talk about the wall. It's brought a lot more journalists from all over the country down to see for themselves what the border's about.
I think it's also a political strategy that works.
How so?
I mean, we've seen it throughout Eastern Europe and how other strongmen use the whole concept of a wall or building the wall to rile fear-mongering, xenophobia, scaring people. Sometimes I wonder whether the White House, whether the administration is really looking for a solution or they're looking more for re-election. And we have a president who's I think in some ways he's a marketing genius, you know. He loves this whole idea of optics and just scaring.
Of a crisis.
Of a crisis, right? I mean, he creates a crisis and then he allegedly solves the crisis. And people say, that's our guy, you know. It's a symptom. And I'm going to use a line that Angela uses a lot. It's the wall is more than geography. It's a mindset. And it's a peek into the future. And I think it's a way to get people to kind of think, you know, we're losing our country. Our country's changing. We have to go back to the good old days, whatever that was. And so the wall is very much a symbol of that.
Angela, you know, given the administration's focus, the focus on the border, the focus on immigration, it almost seems daily there's some sort of news coverage on all that and the quick kind of rapid pace that things are changing. And because of that, do you think there's something being missed?
Yes. As you know, Carlos, anyone covering the border, we're exhausted. It is hour to hour. I mean, kind of dominated by tweets that, and we have to be careful that that's not dictating coverage, that we're not just reacting all the time, that we're taking the time to look at the facts. And unfortunately, a big part of my job and a lot of journalists now is dispelling myths and fake news, real misinformation. And that's a huge challenge. So that takes up time. In the past, we didn't have to constantly. Yeah, there was fact-checking, but almost every day you have to remind people this is the reality. And stories are being missed because we're always talking about a crisis, real or manufactured, and there's so much happening on the border.
Alfredo, can you help us put this into context? And, you know, what are the roots of immigration that we're seeing today?
Well, I think if you look at the roots, I mean, you have to also look at the U.S. involvement in so many conflicts throughout Latin America. And I think that's a story that does not get as much attention. Angela and I were just there in Guatemala, and one of the things that was interesting to us was the role of the coyotes and the role of the smugglers. I mean, this is the first time in my career as a journalist that I was mistaken, or people were alleging that I was a coyote from El Paso.
Because you were approaching them, asking them questions.
But I had my credentials, and you know, I was, you know, señora, ¿qué opina de esto? Blah, 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 what do you think of this? And they were looking at me saying, no, usted es coyote, you know, you got to leave our community now, you got to leave our village now. And at first I was a little concerned, but then I was fascinated because I thought that this is part of a good story. And they were explaining how coyotes are coming in.
And to the villages.
To the villages and saying, this is the time for you to leave. Because there's so much chaos, because you have a president who's so mercurial that he will change his mind tomorrow. So if you want to get to the United States, now's the time. So there's a lot of that going on.
That's Alfredo Corchado, Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News. Marfa Public Radio's Carlos Morales has also been speaking with Angela Cocherga, who covers the border for the Albuquerque Journal. They've been speaking about their careers covering immigration and the border. More with Corchado and Cocherga is coming up. Plus, young people in underprivileged neighborhoods have a chance to make art, printmaking in particular.
I wanted to bring something to those that were not being properly served, in my opinion.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Two names often come to mind when it comes to expansive coverage of the border, Alfredo Corchado and Angela Cocherga. Corchado is Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News. Cocherga covers the border for the Albuquerque Journal. They spoke last month to our colleague Carlos Morales of Marfa Public Radio. Here's the rest of their conversation.
Angela, lately there have been talks in these parts, especially from the U.S. Representative Will Hurd, who covers this district, about a quote-unquote, you know, smart wall, a very technology-driven approach to border security, you know, radar, surveillance cameras, drones, things of that sort. Do you think these are things that make sense and could work?
Well, I mean, we have a lot of that, and you can certainly build on it. And Hurd is talking about, especially in areas where you can't just put up a physical structure. It makes no sense here in the Big Bend region I think that it's a combination of tools where different things make sense along the border in different places. And even you'll hear from, you know, the Border Patrol. I mean, you can put up a wall, but somebody's got to watch it. So, you know, the human part of it. The wall seems like it's a simple solution, and it's everything's focused on that, but it really is to the detriment of the rest of trying to secure the border or border enforcement. And again, fixing that asylum process, because people are coming because they feel like they have a shot. And even if they only get to stay for 2 or 3 years, because there's a huge backlog of cases, that might make sense to someone from Guatemala who needs to make a little money. And right now, that backlog is kind of enticing people to come because they know they might be able to stay. And 80% of Central Americans don't get asylum, but of course, they always think I'll be the exception.
At what point do we begin to see the border change and become more militarized, more of a security-minded approach to the border? When do we see that happen, and is it because of immigration concerns?
I think it was after 9/11. I mean, I think the soul of this country, the sense of optimism, the sense of hopefulness was replaced by fear, and that's something that's carried us since then. 2006, 2007, you start seeing the sort of the buildings of the wall. I always think of Carlos Fuentes when he talked about the scar, mm-hmm. the scar on the border. As a native of Mexico, as someone who lives on the border, it's a wound, and it's gushing. I mean, it's open. And I think that's something that people maybe in the Midwest or other parts of the country don't understand. You know, a lot of these border communities wouldn't survive without the Mexican side. And we have to find a way to not lose that integration, not lose that communication, not lose these ongoing efforts where people go back and forth. Because I think that'll be the detriment to the border.
To be a border reporter, an immigration reporter, you have to interact a lot with Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and all these various agencies and groups. And I'm wondering for both of you, how has that relationship evolved?
Well, I think this is where having this long-time experience on the border comes into play and is so crucial. Because even under the Obama administration, there's more and more tightening and trying to control the message and giving access to journalists to information. And it's only gotten worse under the Trump administration. So it's very tough. Everything, they want everything to come out of Washington, D.C. I have sources that will talk to me. And they've pushed back, even some of them, trying to say, we need D.C. to let us talk because we want to tell you what's happening. We want to give you the correct information instead of just a no comment, which makes, you know, does not make the story any stronger.
No, I mean, I see a lot of people at times sort of cringing, you know, when they put out information that may be somewhat distorted, may not be entirely true. But again, these are people, in some cases, these are people I've known since they were, in high school with my brother. They will sort of find a way to tell you this is not entirely the accurate picture, but this is what the White House is promoting. And I think you have to realize as a border reporter that there is Washington and then there are people on the ground. Yes, you have to report the policy, but you also have to really have good sources on the ground who may not be able to talk to you on the record or so forth, but at least they can guide you in a more background way and try to help you understand the many layers of the story.
Alfredo, I want to kind of end our conversation by revisiting something you mentioned during our conversation. You recalled Carlos Fuentes and his description of the border as a scar, and that reminds me of a very similar thing that Gloria Anzaldúa once said. She described the border as an open wound where the third world grates upon the first and bleeds. And I'm wondering for both of you, does that still ring true to you?
It rings true to me, and it rings, you know, and something I saw also in Eastern Europe. You take these people in and los exprimes. I don't know how you say los exprimes in English, but you squeeze them out and then you discard them. You have no use for them anymore. I think in many ways it's a story of America. You know, it's a story that's happened over 200 years, more than 200 years, and it keeps repeating itself.
I think that wound is now nationwide. I think we're being ripped apart and we're openly bleeding because of this divisiveness and this polarization. And I think maybe the border, which has gone through this on and off since the creation of these two countries, has found ways to heal over. And, you know, yeah, it, sometimes it's just a scab, but people find a way to go on and to work together. And maybe that can provide some lessons about how people on both sides of the border have found a way. And often because family ties, economic ties, cultural ties, we need each other. This border's not going anywhere, and we have to find a way to work together. So the wide gaping wound is across the country. It's going to get worse with the elections of 2020, and maybe the border can offer some lessons.
Carlos, I got to tell you, I mean, I think journalism, I think the kind of stuff you're doing, telling stories, you know, I think stories are very powerful, and stories are one of the ways for people to heal, whether you're in Marfa or whether you're in Ohio. I mean, I just telling stories, going out and trying to connect with people, I find that that's really the best way to heal and maybe close the wound.
We've heard a conversation with Alfredo Corchado, Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News, and Angela Cocherga, who covers the border for the Albuquerque Journal. Corchado is author of Midnight in Mexico, A Reporter's Journey Through a Country's Descent into Darkness, and Homelands, Four Friends, Two Countries, and the Fate of the Great Mexican-American Migration. Marfa Public Radio reporter Carlos Morales spoke to Corchado and Cocherga for the program West Texas Talk, a weekly interview program produced by Marfa Public Radio. An extended version of this interview and an archive of past interviews are online at marfapublicradio.org. Students from underprivileged backgrounds don't often get to spread their artistic wings in the classroom. There's a studio in San Antonio's West Side that's actually paying young people to make art all day. Walking into La Printeria is like walking into a middle school gym. Literally, La Printeria is located in the gymnasium of the former Lincoln Middle School, now the Westside Education Training Center run by Alamo Colleges. The long rectangular space amplifies the vacuum cleaner-like sounds of the printmaking equipment. The room is decorated with poster-like prints of all shapes, sizes, and colors. Harvey Mireles is the founder and director of La Printeria. He says it's not just a workspace for painters and designers to create multiple copies of their work.
The other thing was that we could work with kids, primarily kids of in the inner city, underserved communities, and provide them the skill set for creating art, creating prints primarily.
Mireles is himself a native of the West Side, a traditionally underserved section of San Antonio.
And I wanted to bring something to those that were not being properly served, in my opinion.
La Printeria is offering a 10-week summer session as part of a workforce program under the San Antonio Housing Authority. Seven young people who live in public housing are participating this year. They start off learning how to create single-color prints and will gradually create a design with up to six colors. The week I come to visit, they're working on Lichtenstein recreations. Roy Lichtenstein was an American pop artist whose comic book-like works are brightly colored and prominently feature polka dots known as Benday dots.
The second layer of my print is going to have five colors. So this is the second color.
Denise Curtis is a 19-year-old attending Howard University.
So basically, I just chose to use Roy Lichtenstein's Girl with a Ribbon. I guess I kind of subverted it because it was like a blonde girl with blue eyes with an American ribbon on it. So I subverted it and turned it into a black woman with Afro. And I changed ribbon into the Garvey flag for African Americans. I guess I just wanted to just celebrate black women for once.
17-year-old Romeo Carmona is on the computer cleaning up a recreation of Lichtenstein's still life with cow skull.
I just think it would look good in my room as like a little poster.
Carmona didn't used to be a fan of art.
Well, I took an art class freshman year, and I hated it so much. I'm not going to lie. It was like the worst class I've ever taken. But I consider myself creative as far as like music and stuff goes. So like I always take the opportunity to do stuff like that whenever I get the opportunity.
Desiree Gomez, also 17, is using a deeper blue for her print of Lichtenstein's Crying Girl. She became interested in art as a freshman when her dad would send her drawings from jail.
My dad, he was in jail for 8 years. He recently got out, but every year, Valentine's, holidays, he would always send me a drawing. So me, I really wanted to be like that. Like, I wanted to be as talented as him.
19-year-old Maria Sendejas is a recent transplant to San Antonio. She's an apprentice at La Printeria and is grateful to have discovered it.
I mean, they are able to provide such an open space for the community, and a lot of the time with my experiences, that's not the case. And it's something that's open to the public, whether it's through small sessions or whether they're willing to take you in and give you a space to all in all practice and, you know, just really do what you're passionate about doing, so...
Each young printmaker in the summer session will create a total of 10 prints in the workshop, which wraps up in August. La Printeria founder Harvey Mireles has hopes a local gallery will showcase and sell their work. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.